How can your organization benefit from KBS leaders? KBS Interim Executive and Leadership Consulting has more than 120 years of award-winning experience. The dream team at KBS Leaders brings diverse expertise to address the unique challenges and concerns of any organization. KBS Leaders can fill a vacant position, create a strategy, or enhance the effectiveness of leaders or a team. Led by Kim Brown Sims, KBS Leaders creates and transforms leaders of any type of organization, resulting in a more compassionate, collaborative, and focused workplace. Visit kbsleaders.com to learn more. Schedule a consultation to achieve the unimaginable.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
It's time for All Things Napa with your host, Lee W. Miller, a community leader, full-time realtor, and a serial networker passionate about promoting local businesses. Let's learn what's new in the Napa business scene today.
Good morning. How is Napa Valley doing today? Hey, it's great to be on the air. I am Lee W. Miller, and as Lauren just shared with you, I am a full-time realtor when I'm not behind this microphone, proudly hanging my license with Golden Gate Sotheby's, and I'm also the founder of Napa Business Advantage, and Napa Business Advantage is a local business referral group. And if you know anybody in the Napa area that's also passionate about giving back to their community, have them reach out to me because we're always looking to help other businesses grow. And what separates us from other business referral groups is every 2 or 3 months we have a little mixer where we get to know other businesses and potentially other clients, and we kind of turn that into a little mini fundraiser, and we find a nonprofit that's very small budget, and we raise a whopping $500 for that nonprofit. So the business referral group that likes to give back. I'm also a past president of the Napa Association of Realtors and board member on the Vine Trail Coalition, and just now, or recently, not now as in moments ago, but recently stepped down a couple weeks ago after 5 years on the Vine Trail board, business and other activities, including this program, have taken me to a place where I can't really continue to do that anymore. But boy, I had a wonderful time and felt like I had some impact there. So we've got, as every radio show host always says, a great show for you today. I've never heard anybody say, you know, kind of got some mediocre guests coming in the studio, so stick around. That's not what we're doing today. We've got Napa's own, you know, I want to say it this way. Everybody knows that Napa Valley grows grapes. But what some people may not know is Napa Valley also grows Olympians. And we're going to be introducing Donnie Robinson, Napa's own Olympian. That's just such a high achievement that so few people do. You know, I ran a marathon, and in fact, I'm just going to go ahead and turn the microphones on for Donnie and Kim Brown Sims, our other guests, in case you want to kibitz in before we officially begin the interview. So I ran a marathon. Less than 1% of the world's population runs a marathon.
Well,
pat myself on the back.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's painful.
Oh, yes. And I will never do it again. But you take that less than 1% and say, okay, well, how many people in the world's population have won an Olympic medal? Holy moly. That's a very, very, very small number. And I just utmost respect, not only for Donnie Robinson, for his athletic achievements, but for him as a man of character and integrity. And we need more Donnie Robinsons around the world. So welcome, Donnie, and we'll be right back to you. And then Kim Brown Sims, who just kibitzed in, a regular guest and a sponsor. Happy to have Kim in the studio today. We're going to be talking about the enhancement of relationships and how that plays in the workforce. We're not talking relationships like boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife stuff, but all of that is important too, but relationships in the workplace, and that's going to be pretty interesting to talk about. But I'm excited. Let's introduce officially Donnie Robinson. Welcome to the studio.
Lee, thanks for having me. Great to be here. Always.
Great. And I know that you are no stranger to that microphone because you are somewhat of a celebrity in Napa. So you're comfortable on the air. And what I'm going to try and do is hopefully have some things come out in this little interview that are, you know, maybe stuff you haven't said on the air before. So we'll see how that goes. A lot of that's going to be up to you, though.
For sure.
Okay. So for people who may not know, give us a quick little background on you and your relationship to, you know, being a Napa native and things of that nature.
Yes, Donnie Robinson, 36 years old, born, raised, and still reside in Napa. Love it. Couldn't beat it. You know, when I went to high school, everyone's like, oh, I got to get out of here. Luckily, with my travels and BMX racing, I got to come back to the place that I loved. And yeah, it's a little bit of a trek to any airport. But other than that, I can't beat this place. It's so supportive. Place I call home. And BMX racing, you know, bicycle riding, that has been my life since almost day one, since I was 6 years old. My dad was actually the promoter of the speedway races here in Napa. And his idea was like, oh, let's get him into BMX racing. And then he'll get into speedway or motocross. And that did not happen with me. So it was BMX racing my whole life, and luckily I got to stay focused and committed and had the support of my parents and community. We, you know, we had a BMX track here from the time that I started, so I think it was a perfect storm.
That's like a fairy tale story. What, do you recall what it was that drove you to stick to the pedals and not to the motor?
I don't. I mean, it was just, I think that we find our thing.
Right.
And the bicycle, it was individual. I could, if I had a great day or a bad day, I could go out on my bicycle, feel the freedom, and it'd be me. Right. I didn't have to rely on a teammate. Like I was it. And, you know, my family was my pit crew. And so everybody at the track, it's an individual sport, but it's a family. And so it was just a thing that I was drawn to. And, you know, I think I got the competitive side from my mom. And so I was like, oh, man, I want to be the best at the thing that I love the most. And I worked hard and had the support and eventually got there.
Boy, I could go in so many different directions right now. And questions that I hadn't even thought about asking. What do you think makes it why some people, yourself included, came to that conclusion that you wanted to be the best, as opposed to other people that say, I just want to show up and have a good time. And, you know, if I win, I win. You know, if I don't, you know, and other people are not satisfied with that, but they want something more than that, but not the best.
Well, my current role with, you know, kind of spending a lot of time with kids out at the BMX track on bikes, everybody is different. And I think that what I'm learning now is we're not always now who we're meant to be. And so when we're able to stick with something, we get to see our true potential and kind of see our light shine. And that gives us the motivation to keep going. And so it's hard for me to go back when I was 6 and 7 and 8 and be like, well, why did I start this? Why did I continue to do it? Because I've always been the smallest in my group, right? Whether it's on the BMX track or in my class at school. I got made fun of a lot. And so I wasn't picked for basketball. I wasn't picked for baseball. I wasn't picked for the teams. I had to do it on my own. And so to have a sport that I could be like, I just want to be me in this thing, was hugely valuable. And again, I don't know why we do things if we're not aiming to do it at the best of our ability, not necessarily to be the best, but to be the best version of ourselves.
Sure.
Kind of thing.
And big distinction there too.
Yeah, for sure. And I wanted to be that. And that's what I'm kind of passing on now is, hey, just let's be the best version of yourself right now. And then you get to see where you grow from there and what you can possibly be. And I know I'm getting a little bit of ahead of myself, but you know, with bicycles, I say kids like, hey, how far can two wheels take you? Like, you don't know, right? They could take you from your house to your friend's house, but in life and just kind of what you're learning to be and just the confidence and belief in yourself is just the beginning. And I love seeing kids kind of stick with it and kind of see where they can go with it.
All right. So let's go back a little bit. You were from age six doing this competition. There was a track behind the college and it was kind of a big deal in the community, or certainly was for you. Now, after you started just, you know, blowing everybody away and winning the competitions there, at what age did you start like going to bigger competitions?
I wish it was that simple, like just getting on the track and blowing people away. That wasn't me. Like I said, I was small, and so I had to seemingly work harder and longer than everybody else to see that success. But I just loved what I was doing, and I tell my kids now, like, be remembered for something positive. And so it wasn't always winning for me. It was putting on a show. It was being the best sport. It was making a move that people couldn't forget. It was just standing out in some way. And I think that early on that was what I had to gravitate towards and be that thing.
Somewhat in response to the being picked on and teased or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
And just also what's in you innately.
Yes, I wanted to be somebody. I wanted to stand out. And I had to do that in some way. But it wasn't until I was about 8 years old that I started to travel to national events. And that's what we're promoting now is just, hey, start local. There's regional tracks around the area in Santa Clara and Roseville and Manteca and Ukiah. But we've got one in our very own community here in Napa, and that's the best place to start. But the kids that do kind of feed off that competition and want to be something more, it's a great thing about our sport that you can take it to those places. You can take it to the national level. You could take it to the world championships and spend time with your friends around the country doing that thing that you love so much.
You know, that's a great way to look at it. It's, you know, find your passion and excel at it. But really enjoy it too, because there's so many people that have jobs, as I refer to them, and it pays the bills, but they're not really doing what they love to do. And obviously you are. So you won the bronze medal in 2008. And what did you see happening in your life thereafter? What was going to be the transition? Did you anticipate competing in 2012 as well?
Oh yeah. I mean, a heck of a journey from 8 years old to 25 years old when I, you know, got the chance to represent the United States in the Olympic Games for the first Olympic Games that BMX racing was being held. What an honor that was. And then to walk away with a bronze medal, it was great. It was, again, it justified everything that I had done, you know, the prior, you know, 19 years of my career to get to that point. And absolutely, it was kind of the best time of my professional career in 2008 and 2009. You know, I followed it up with a world championship, right, the year after the Olympics. So I was kind of riding high and I was like, okay, yep. this is my time to shine on the world stage. And, you know, definitely, I had aspirations to make it to the 2012 games and heck, even 2016, because I wasn't backing down at that time. Unfortunately, I did not get there for 2012. I made the Olympic trials, but did not perform well enough to get there. So it was at that time I kind of started to see everything trickle down a little bit, kind of go in a different direction. And that was the point of my life where I had that next challenge of, hey, where does it go from here?
Right. So where did it go and how did you get there?
Oh, what a interesting story. I think that everything happens for a reason and we don't fight things. I don't fight things as much as I did before. I mean, I know what I want, but kind of got to get led in a direction. And so it was in 2014 that actually the Olympic silver medalist and myself were like, hey, we're coming down to the twilight years of our career. We got to end up doing something. And so we had this idea to do a...
And that would be Mike Day?
That would be Mike Day.
Wow. What a knowledgeable host.
I know. You did your homework. And so we were like, oh, man, we need to do something else because we're kind of fading away competitively. So we had the idea to do kind of a virtual coaching platform. And so I reached out to one of my friends that was a photographer, and he did a lot of web work. I was like, hey, can you build our website and everything? And he did. And so that really didn't lead to much, but it was the first part of my next kind of transition phase, the Donnie 2.0. And as I retired in 2016, at the last race of the year over Thanksgiving, I actually stepped into my role right after I stepped off of my bike, and I had just created our sport's first ever structured participation program for beginners only. And we launched it here right in Napa at North Bay BMX. And so it was very interesting to see how I could step from the bike, like as a competitor, and then into the role of an advocate and somebody who could get more kids on bikes and get them to enjoy the sport the way that they wanted to, like I was able to and like it did for my family. And that was it. I've been the guy for the BMX Racing League now, and it started in Napa, and now we've kind of scaled all the way across the country, and we're in 80 locations at tracks nationwide.
Wow.
And so it's been so awesome to kind of just pay it forward, what this sport has given to us. It's just the smiles, right? It doesn't have to be about, you know, aspirations of Olympics or being the best. It's just, hey, let's get on bikes and let's have fun. Just like parents and grandparents that are listening now, like that's what we did. We got home from school, we rode bikes. You knew where everybody was hanging out because there were bikes were in the front yard. Now everybody's hanging out at North Bay BMX, or at least we're trying to, and that's where all the bikes are kind of laying down, and everybody's hanging out.
That is so cool. And had you know, we won't know for sure, but I suspect very highly that had you not been Olympian. You wouldn't have had the cachet and the credibility to launch this thing now nationwide, and having so many people, kids in particular, putting their phones down and getting some exercise and competing and learning sportsmanship and just everything that athletics brings to a community and to an individual. That's just wonderful.
We are certainly letting the kids do a real life video game, them be their own superhero and their own video game. And I don't know. I don't know if my name or what I did or who I was helped at all. I think that how I delivered our offering was everything. I don't think that many people, I think credibility and legitimacy with the Olympics and the medal and all of that stuff certainly helps, but I don't think it's necessary. I mean, these parents are just craving for somebody to allow their family something that they are searching for or that they didn't even know that they were searching for, and that is more family time and something that their kids can adopt and get an identity in, because, you know, traditional sports, I mean, it's for some, but I think that families in general are looking for something different, and what's better than bicycle riding? You know, you learn to walk, you learn how to ride a bike, not so much anymore, but we're trying to bring that back and to be able to do it on a BMX track, not necessarily just on flat ground, but having jumps and obstacles that are maneuverable for all ages, right? We've got 3-year-olds out there. We've got 63-year-olds out there. It's a sport that the whole family can do. I think that it again is has kind of been meant to be, and the community's embraced it, and I think this is just the beginning.
All right. So if this is just the beginning, what's the future hold?
Ooh, that's a good question, Lee. So the Napa BMX Racing League has been in existence for 3 years, and so we had 482 enrollments this past year. So it continues to grow year after year. And North Bay BMX, I mean, we've got the programming for all levels, right? We've got the beginners. If these riders want to excel into the expert ranks, which we're doing, you know, we've turned beginner league riders into experts that are going to be frequenting the World Championships this year. We've got free community track time on Saturdays, 1:30 to 3 o'clock. We provide all the bikes and the helmets. Like, families can just come out and be a part of this sport and see if it's right for them. And if it's right for them, then let's join the Napa BMX Racing League. You know, we've got 4 seasons a year. We're going to start again in the spring. 5 weeks, $129. We provide everything. The bikes, the helmets, the jerseys, the instruction, the racing, awards, pizza party, everything. So that is continuing to grow, and we love that. But I want to start going to the kids. I don't necessarily want the parents to be required to take them out to the track, because some don't have that luxury. Whether it's work or just transportation in general, I want to go to the kids. And so I want programs in our local schools. I want us to build beginner little dirt tracks at schools for these kids to ride their bikes during recess, or have enrichment programs after school. Like, that's where I want to head next. And I think it's the key, right, to just include more of our community and kind of meet them where they're at and then see them grow from that place. Of course, that's not going to happen without cooperation and support, but I am here for the community and the kids, and I think that we're just scratching the surface. So that is kind of where I'm off to. I mean, shoot, I got aspirations of community-wide bike rides on the Vine Trail. I just have all of these ideas.
Put some jumps on the Vine Trail.
I don't know about that, but yeah, I mean, maybe manageable stuff. But, you know, again, it's just, let's get families back on bikes outside to do their thing and to show them just how, you know, special and talented they are.
Absolutely. So go back to the Saturdays. Is this every Saturday from 1:30 to 3:30 that families can come out? They don't have to pay the $129 and then find out, oh, this isn't for me. So this is kind of a free trial. Go out there, ride the bike, see if you like it. See if you want to push yourself a little harder. If you don't, like you say, it's all whatever any individual wants to do. But is that every Saturday, or is there certain times a year?
No, so weather permitting, it's year round.
Okay.
And thanks to Napa Parks and Recreation, like they're the ones who started this whole thing on Saturdays. Like, we want our community to have the access, and it's proven to be very awesome, because there is no obligation. There is no fee. Just come out and test out our sport. And you can do that as many times as you want, no pressure. But if there's a desire to do something a little bit more and get into that structured participation program, that's where the Napa BMX Racing League kind of falls into play. And so the best way to kind of keep tabs on everything is going to our North Bay BMX Facebook page. And we'll have updates on everything, weather and you know, league seasons. Again, it'll start in early April. But it's good. We start out with, you know, open houses, and we try to make everything as free as possible, accessible as possible. And then when families want to jump in, it's certainly priced right for them to kind of get involved and find a new sport for the family.
Great. So Facebook better than a website or anything? The Facebook page is the best one?
Absolutely.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Robinson, Olympian, Napan, and all-around great guy. Thank you so much, Donnie, for being here, and continued success with the program. You're going to see this 61-year-old. I was hoping that you would say, you know, from 3 to 53, and then I'd say, okay, I'm out. But I do really want to try it, but I'm a little fearful of injury, which is rare for me. Because, you know, I jumped out of an airplane and things like that. It's not, but I've just been injury plagued of late, ever since playing softball and pulling a hamstring on April 30th last year.
So. Late BMX racing is as easy as riding a bike, but so much more fun. And you're never going to know until you know. Okay. So we hope to see you out there soon.
Well, my issue is I will want to do the big jumps. And I probably shouldn't, but, you know, baby steps.
Well, there are no big jumps, luckily. And you're going to need the speed. If you want to catch any air, you're going to need the speed.
Oh, you got to catch
right
air.
And right off the bat, you're not going to have that speed. So it's good. The sport kind of helps you pace yourself. So
okay,
it's
good.
All right.
You can do it.
I can. Well, are you going to do it with me?
Oh, sure. I love riding bikes. I have a road bike. I have a Peloton. I'm out there.
Okay.
It's a great community.
Oh, did you see the story in the Napa Register of how many of our moms are out there racing BMX in the BMX Racing League?
No, I did not. So the
gig.
Whole soccer mom thing is now
BMX
moms?
Absolutely. We had 14 moms out there last year, all doing it for our BMX racer, Addie Dominici, that unfortunately passed away this past year. But they did that, rallied behind Addie. And so our goal also is to get more girls out to the track in Addie's name. She was just the perfect everything. She started in the league, came on my team, loved riding and just everything that we had to offer. And so now the girls and the moms are rallying behind her and, you know, making everything we do every better.
Great. All right. I give you my word. I'm going to go out there and you're going to give me your word that I'm not going to get hurt.
Promise.
All right. Thanks, Donnie. All right. couple of things I want to make sure that I get out there on the air. My friend Christine is doing a prostate cancer fundraiser on April 25th at the Napa Valley Distillery. Contact me directly, leewmiller@gmail.com, if you have any questions about that. Maybe you want to contribute to that or just participate or anything. So, and if you also know somebody that might want to be a guest or would be a good guest on this show, reach out to me for that as well. And a big shout out to the guys that have been remodeling my house. We've been displaced. All of our stuff is in a pod and has been since the 3rd of January. And speaking of Christine and Michael, they've been so gracious to let my wife and I stay at their house. But the guys that have been working on it, Fernando, Chewy, Armando, Luis, let's say Fernando again, he gets two shout outs. I will be bringing you lunch today, and I know I talked about pizza, but today I changed my mind. No pizza. It's going to be Dickie's Barbecue. So start salivating. I will see you in a couple hours for lunch. All right. We're going to take a quick little break here, and we're going to be back with the Napa Nugget, and then we're going to maybe do a real estate minute. And have Kim Brown Sims talk to us about relationships in the workplace. Be right back.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
How can your organization benefit from KBS leaders? KBS Interim Executive and Leadership Consulting has more than 120 years of award-winning experience. The dream team at KBS Leaders brings diverse expertise to address the unique challenges and concerns of any organization. KBS Leaders can fill a vacant position, create a strategy, or enhance the effectiveness of leaders or a team. Led by Kim Brown Sims, KBS Leaders creates and transforms leaders of any type of organization, resulting in a more compassionate, collaborative, and focused workplace. Visit kbsleaders.com to learn more. Schedule a consultation to achieve the unimaginable.
Welcome back to All Things Napa. Boy, that was really cool talking to Donnie. And Donnie, I hope he sticks around. I know if he has things to do, he will be taken off, and that's no problemo. All right, so the Napa Nugget, that is that one little trivial thing that I talk about Napa every show. And this one probably a little bit longer than the three-sentence thing that I did, but I did some research, and you know the hat building in downtown, the Napa Mill complex? Well, that was constructed in 1884 through 1887, and those bricks were actually made here in Napa, and some say, I don't believe it, but some say that that facility is one of the most haunted places in all of Napa County. Well, that was named after and built by Captain Alfred E. Hatt. And from a young age, Hatt lived the life of a seafarer, eventually becoming a boat captain on the Sacramento River after his immigration in 1859 from Germany. Imagine this. This guy is 18 years old, and now he's the captain of a boat going up and down the Sacramento River. He settled in Napa in 1884 and built that building. And from that building, shipped out coal and primarily grain and some vegetables. Now, the second floor of the Hat building is Hat Hall, and that was utilized for secret society meetings and banquets and other social things. And to this day, that is what, not the secret society meetings, but it's meetings and banquets and things in that building. Kind of cool. For all these years, it's still kind of doing the same thing. And though that building was placed on the National Register of Historic Places in 79, the fate of the Hat Mill complex was uncertain for many years. Then along comes Harry Price. Harry Price renovated it in 92, preserving many of the historic features such as the silo and the milling equipment that is still there in Sweetie Pies. That's one of the businesses there in the structure. And the elegant tin work and the flooring can be found in Hat Hall and many of the River Inn's hotel rooms. The cornerstone of the renovated complex, the Napa River Inn, opened in 2000, and along with other shops and eateries, and the hotel's presence helped usher in the revitalization, which has transformed Napa's downtown in recent years. So it all started with the renovation of that building. And I remember coming here when I was still in the corporate world. I would come to Napa and have business, and I was so excited. I was going to be in Napa. I was going to be able to do some cool stuff. Well, no, I wasn't, because nothing was open. And so that's just kind of the way it was. That was back in the early 90s. mid-90s, and now we've got this beautiful, vibrant downtown with all kinds of businesses. So that is your Napa nugget for the day. Kim, how are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you, Lee?
I am doing wonderful, because Fernando and all the other guys are going to finish. Did you hear that, Fernando? they are listening right now. So they are going to finish everything, and my wife and I get to move back into our house. No furniture, but we get to be there with just a mattress, and then the furniture all gets moved back in on Saturday. So
nice, though, right? To be in your own surroundings, your own belongings.
Yeah. And you just don't realize when you're going through it, the little things of being displaced. And you know, I've got an electric toothbrush. Well, I took the toothbrush. Well, I didn't take the charger.
Right.
And surprisingly, it lasted a good 2 weeks. I just had to go dig up a few days ago the charger. Right. You know, I can't possibly use a manual toothbrush. That would just be uncivilized. All right, Kim, I'm really excited to talk about relationships, because I don't know if you knew this. Well, you know that I have a wonderful marriage.
Yes.
And been married for 36 years, mm-hmm. together for 39. And throughout my life, people used to ask me about relationship, mm-hmm. Advice.
Right.
And, you know, I would tell them stuff, and they would thank me and say, that worked great. And so then I ended up getting certified as a life coach with a special
specialty emphasis,
thank you, on relationship enhancement.
Wonderful. Well, maybe you should be doing this segment then.
No, I'm just asking the questions here.
Well, wait a minute. Wait, first, just what's your best bit of advice? I'm very curious.
Well, it's all about communication.
Yes.
And you just have to communicate. And I actually get frustrated when I'm watching a movie or a TV show, and I know that the script has been written that way, but when a character is in a huff and they're just going to give their partner the silent treatment or something, it's like, oh, you're just driving me nuts. Just don't be like that. Mm-hmm. And all of that translates into business as well. You've got coworkers, you've got boss and employee and all of that. And if you just communicate openly, it's going to get resolved. May not be the ideal way that everybody wants, all parties want, but at least it's not going to fester.
It's so true. So Communication is the key, but there are so many elements to communication that are important. The most important being active listening. So it's the idea that when someone is communicating, you listen to understand what it is that they're trying to share versus listening to respond, which most of us do.
Right. Guilty. But the awareness of that helps me quell it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And that's key. Again, relationships are based off of your level of emotional intelligence, and that theme just keeps coming up. And it's really your awareness of what's happening with that other individuals and your awareness of the emotions that come up for you. So if you're communicating with someone and they say something that angers you, to stop and recognize, I'm angry, and to actually name it, what's happening right now is causing me to react in an angry way. When you name it, then it stops both parties and they can regroup and think about what is it, or you can ask the question, what is it that is triggering you, or what is it that, you know, it just opens the door for communication, for that dialogue to happen. And I think that's where most people falter, is that they talk to get their meaning across. They're not listening to the response that their partner is giving them. And then they're also not listening to understand either one, right? They're just trying to make their point.
There's an acronym that fits that perfectly, and it's CUBA.
CUBA, let's hear it.
Clarity and understanding before agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And that is everything in communication, but especially what seems to rise to the surface on that right now is political rhetoric. Everyone wants to try and convince you to believe what they believe and be a liberal or be a conservative or be this or be that or an environmentalist, whatever it is, and they're not interested in learning what your perspective is and why you think or believe a certain thing.
Right, because our beliefs are all predicated off of what our experiences, what our life experiences have been. And so if you have an opinion about something, that opinion is a narrow point of view, and it's narrow because it's only you. It's only what you've experienced. And so the reality is, if someone makes a statement, you recognize, okay, that's based off of their perspective. And then you say, well, what led you to that? What of your life experiences leads you to believe that that's the case? What are some additional perspectives that can be taken from what was said or what is happening right now? And that's really the key to communication, is seeking that understanding and using open-ended sentences such as, you know, what does that look like? How will we get to the result you think we should get to? You know, what are your ideas to solve this problem? Because that, the more information you get, the easier it will be for you to kind of digest and have an understanding of what potentially could work between the two of you.
I didn't want to interrupt you, but I got to tell you, when you said that an opinion is a narrow opinion, I bristled a little bit.
Sure.
Just like when people use the word ignorant,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't mean stupid.
Nope.
And just like narrow,
it's not negative.
Yeah, it's not negative. It's just matter of fact.
Well, if you think about the billions of people in this world, you have your life experience. And if you look at it from a piece of pie perspective, and everybody is in the pie, you have your opinion and your perspective, and you are one out of billions of people. So that's why it's a narrow perspective, because it's not a perspective of a multitude of people who have had the same experience. No one of us can say that we've had the exact same experience in our life
right.
as someone else.
And your degree of passion on a particular topic doesn't make it any more broad.
No, it doesn't. You know, there's a couple things that I want to tie into the previous interview, and that is
the idea that building relationships comes from, again, emotional intelligence and being able to read the emotions of others. And you can only do that if you get out from behind your digital media, from your screens and the games and so on and so forth, and really start interacting with people. So developing the BMX racetracks and getting kids and families out to interact with each other, getting off of the screens, allows them to develop the skills that are important to build relationships. You know, it's something that we're seeing in the corporate world, in the workforce, is that younger generations are having more difficulty having one-on-one interactions and actually being able to build personal relationships, because they don't know how to read emotion and they don't know how to respond to things that are triggering them. So, you know, it's coming kind of full circle, and I think people are really starting to recognize that you have to put down your digital media and get out in the world and start experiencing it again.
You just made me recall, because my career was in technology in the corporate world, and I remember we, as the sales and marketing gregarious outgoing types, would reference the coders that had virtually no social skills. And we almost lauded them for that they're so good at drinking a gallon of Mountain Dew every day and staying up until 4 o'clock in the morning because they were on a roll in coding. Yeah, that's great that they have that skill, but then take that outside of the keyboard and the screen, and that was in the mid-80s. Mm-hmm. And now, because of the reasons you just said, it's kind of expanded because of our own personal devices, and that's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and if you think about it as well, there's lots of research and literature out there that tells about the detriment of using, you know, your digital equipment. And I was having a conversation last night with a friend, and we were talking about the idea that back in the day, and so I'm talking in the 90s here, when I got my first pager, laughingly, and when email really started to become prevalent in the workplace, how excited I was to have this mechanism to be able to respond quickly and to engage with more people and to get more done. And the reality is that now, here it is, you know, some 30 years later, it really just creates anxiety and the inability to disconnect. And it does make relationships more challenging, because where I used to pick up the phone or walk down the hall and have a conversation with someone, I'm shooting off an email. And, you know, emails can be interpreted by the receiver as having a certain tone when that tone was unintended.
Right.
You know, and so it's really like, let's just come back to picking up the phone or walking down the hall and having a face-to-face conversation with someone and understanding what that true meaning is and being able to gauge what those emotions are. We just, as a society, don't have that skill set anymore. Do you want to comment on that?
Huh? No, I mean, it's absolutely true. I mean, these kids that are out there interacting with others, on the bike, on the track, learning how to win, learning how to lose, just the proper etiquette, and it's so awesome to see like how they can grow and do things that they had no clue that they even had in them. And I'm talking like public speaking, like the number one fear in all of humankind. I mean, these kids, because of what they've done on the bike and the confidence and belief they've built in themselves, they're able to get on our microphone or address, the hundreds of kids at a team practice. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome. And I had no clue about it. I had no clue how powerful it was. It was part of my lifestyle. But now, you know, with all of the electronics, I mean, everybody's kind of behind the scenes, and they're not able to have that interaction, that develop those relationships, those personal connections, and everything that allows us to grow into, what we can be.
You know, being anonymous It's very easy to just say whatever we want to say without consequence. And you're anonymous when you're behind a screen. But when you're having a face-to-face dialogue with someone, you actually have to own your emotions, and you have to be aware of the emotions that are coming from the other person. You have to take responsibility for what you're saying and what you're doing. And if you say something and you see that it's causing a reaction, to stop and pause and to say, I get the impression that didn't settle well with you, and let's have some conversation about that. Because, you know, my intent is not to make you mad or, you know, to really put you down a wrong path. It's to build that relationship and for both of us to benefit from it.
And yet, if someone lacks the EQ that you're talking about, they go on their merry way. They have no idea that right. they did or said something that didn't set well with somebody. So it's not necessarily their inability to have that conversation, but if they don't even get the trigger in the first place,
the lack of awareness.
Yeah.
And again, we're becoming less and less skilled as a society with that because of all the screen time. And it obviously, it's not only your professional life, but it's your personal life as well. I mean, there's, again, literature out there that says that if you are interacting with your loved one and you pull up your phone and you start looking at your phone, that you are immediately cutting off the conversation. They feel, one, they're not trusting you, that you're obviously not engaged, you're not listening to them, and the disinterest starts to set in. And that disinterest over time is going to erode your relationship.
And that's so much more blatant than the body language that we've all talked about mm-hmm. when someone leans back and crosses their arms while you're talking to them.
You're shut down.
Right.
Yeah.
And compared to picking up a phone and looking at it
thing.
And actually then typing a response to a text, that crossing of the arms is so subtle compared to that. And
correct.
Yet just as, you know, doing the same thing. But
right. And it's up to us, again, to own our emotions and to call people out on that. Like, obviously you're now on your phone. So is our conversation over? You know, and even though that's not an open-ended question, it calls attention to the behavior that is being exhibited. And just like when you're raising kids, you want to reinforce positive behaviors. But also, if something is really not going well in an interaction, or someone picks up their phone while you're having that conversation, to say again, what's happening right now, the picking up of the phone is really causing me to feel like I'm not valued, and like this relationship or this conversation is not important. So you own your own feelings and you share those with other people, and it creates that awareness in that other person.
I can imagine that what you just said, if you and I were talking and mm-hmm. I picked my phone up and you said that, even though you were very polite,
mm-hmm.
you were very matter of fact, you weren't condemning me.
Right.
Even though I probably warranted it, that anyone might very well take it as that.
As an attack.
Mm-hmm. And then the very thing that you're attempting to achieve and get to the bottom of the problem and resolve it or reschedule the conversation, whatever it is now worse because in our hyper sensitive, you offended me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we talked last time that, and I would love for the word offended to be stricken from the language mm-hmm. and there just not be a word for that
right.
because people are overly offended. But talk about how
to respond.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the question is, if you come back at me defensively, if I were to say to you, you know, what's happening right now, it really makes me feel. So I'm owning my feelings. It makes me feel like you're disinterested and not valuing our interaction. If you come back defensively, first of all, that's a reflection of your emotional intelligence, right? It's that defensive instead of the seeking to understand. It's seeking to respond. Well, you offended me. So then the person who is engaging in the dialogue, who put it out in the first place, said, well, what specifically about that comment is offensive? I'm saying how I feel based off of what actions are occurring right now. It's not an attack on you. And I really want our relationship to be better. You know, we don't take the time as individuals to say, this is my intent. This is what I would like. I really want us to be, you know, what the end result looks like is that you and I work together collaboratively. And how do we do that? Give me your ideas, because that invites it. First of all, it evokes emotion. You're very important to me and I really want this to work. And then it opens the door for dialogue and mutual participation on how to resolve the problem. Well, what would be better for us to be able to communicate without our phones? It's a simple question, right? Getting down to the root of it. But we don't take the time to do that. I mean, again, it's something you have to practice. I myself have been in situations where I look back on it. That's the other piece, is reflecting on interactions you have and learning lessons from it and applying it moving forward. But I've looked back on interactions I've had and I just think, why didn't I just like dig further? Well, why do you feel that way? You know, what is it that's generating your response, which to me I'm interpreting as anger? You know, owning how we feel and giving the other person the opportunity to express whatever it is that's going on with them. We don't take the time to do that.
Talk about the often used, well, if you feel that way, that's on you, that's not me.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good, that's a really good question. So, we each have to own our own emotions, right? So if the worst response you can give somebody is, I'm sorry you feel that way, right? Because that just means you are taking no ownership in it whatsoever.
It's also saying sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, sorry, not sorry. So if someone responds to you with a, well, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way, or that's on you, that's not on me, it's to say, well, what is it that we're trying to achieve here? Like, come back to the root of what it is you're trying to accomplish and say, how are we going to be able to do that? So you're in your corner and I'm in mine, and neither one of us is seeking to understand. So help me understand, you know, where we need to go in order to accomplish this goal. And to also recognize that compromise is not doing what one person thinks is right. It's compromise. It's how can we achieve this goal and both of us have, you know, some sense of contribution to the end result.
Very good. What else you got?
Well, let's see. You know, one of my favorite phrases from Wayne Dyer is fix the problem, not the blame. And so, again, when you're building relationships, really stop and think about what it is that you're trying to achieve. It's almost going right back to the same conversation we were just having, which is if something happens, don't blame the other person. Well, you did blah, blah, blah. And because of you, blah, 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 say, like, for instance, I'll give you a personal example. This morning I was trying to get out the door and I'm having dialogue with my partner, and he wants to add one more element to the conversation. And I just like, okay, I need to go. I'm going to be late. I need to get myself together. And the conversation kind of deteriorated with, well, you get to talk all morning, but then I don't have my opportunity to have my say, right? And at that moment I could have said, well, you blah, blah, blah. Then I would be fixing the blame. Instead, I said, you know, you're right. Moving forward, perhaps we can, you know, set a time limit and say at a certain time we have to end the conversation and allow, or to say, you know, let's pick this conversation up later instead of I gotta go. I can't, you know, I can't talk about this anymore. And that's on me. That's totally on me. But again, let's engage in how we can fix this problem. I can see that you're upset. You're right. You didn't get the opportunity to finish your sentence. So let's pick this conversation up later and or in the future. You know, what do you think if we, you know, set a time limit for when one of us needs to get out the door so that we're respectful of one another and our responsibilities? It's every day. It's everyday conversation.
I got to tell you, I'm... I don't even know the word, but I'm so happy, I guess, for lack of a better word, to hear you invoke a personal experience that's an hour old.
Absolutely.
Because listening to you, one would assume that you have a absolutely flawless relationship.
Oh, no.
I know. And I mean, I've got a great marriage, but there is no relationship that is perfect and never has the need for the very skills and the very, you know, principles that you're sharing here. Right. So, all right. You're human. Okay.
I am, absolutely. And you know, and that's a conversation that I have on an ongoing basis with people, is that it's constantly choices, decisions, and consequences. Yep. CDC, everyone has choices. You make a choice in how you respond to somebody. You make a choice in how you interact with a person. You make a choice in how you respond to an email. And then you make the decision to do whatever it is that you've decided from all of your choices. And then there are consequences. And if the consequences bear out to be something that is unpalatable, you don't like it, then make it go back to your choices and make a different decision. And you base your decisions off of the experience that you gained from the prior experience. So, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. The definition of growth and failure, which I don't really like that word, but failure is, you know, it's the opportunity to begin again more intelligently, because you gain knowledge, you understand what didn't work and what you can try to get a different outcome.
Absolutely. Kim Brown Sims, KBS Leadership Consulting. If you like what you've heard here today, maybe you're an employee somewhere and you think, oh man, she needs to talk to my boss. Whatever the situation, reach out to Kim, kbsleaders.com. She offers consulting services primarily for business, but when you go to kbsleaders.com, you'll see the immense experience and the credibility that Kim brings to what it is that she offers to the community. So, Kim, thank you very much for being here. Again, I really enjoy our conversations, and I know that they're very helpful for our listeners.
Well, thank you, Lee.
That's going to do it for another episode of All Things Napa. Remember, live each day of your life as if your legacy matters, because it does. Talk to you next week.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
How can your organization benefit from KBS Leaders? KBS Interim Executive and Leadership Consulting has more than 120 years of award-winning experience. The dream team at KBS Leaders brings diverse expertise to address the unique challenges and concerns of any organization. KBS Leaders can fill a vacant position, create a strategy, or enhance the effectiveness of leaders or a team. Led by Kim Brown Sims, KBS Leaders creates and transforms leaders of any type of organization, resulting in a more compassionate, collaborative, and focused workplace. Visit kbsleaders.com to learn more. Schedule a consultation to achieve the unimaginable.